Don't start with me. I'm really not in a mood.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 19, Catch Her in the Lie. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Ah, yeah.
I can't
just
believe.
Got that.
Me too. I was like, I checked it so many times to make sure it wasn't catch her in a lie, which is obviously mm-hmm. the expression. And it took until Dave read it where I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. Salinger, I hardly even know her.
Anyway, before we get into that, let us tell you what's going on the Patreon. Again with this episode 107, dropping August 12th, we are going to be watching Heather Locklear in Saturday Night Live's Melrose Place spoof. This is available on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes, and you can hear that and so very much more if you join us at any level of support at patreon.com/againwiththis. And now, let us start Catch Her in the Lie with our C plot. Michael is curing Kimberly at the beach house. Michael leaps out of bed with Kimberly after having guilt boned her in the last episode. Kimberly marvels that for one whole night she didn't think about her condition, thanks to Michael and his magic wang. Part of that is subtext. He is in
not much.
Not much. He's in such a hurry to get the fuck out that he is going to shower at the hospital, and she claims she has no expectations of repeating the previous night's sex events and asks if he's going to tell Megan about it. He wonders what the point would be rhetorically and then hustles out so fast. You can see in the visual aids Kimberly watching the puff of smoke left in his wake, and just it's something she has seen many times before.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's that night. Michael is meeting Megan at a restaurant 2 hours late with no explanation. She tries to be mad, but she is too digmatized. And then he
drunk.
She is also drunk. Yes. Then he blurts that Kimberly asked him to fuck her when Megan obviously intuits that he did so. She makes a brief scene at the restaurant and then storms out. And then Matt is covering shooters for reasons we will get to when he spots Megan at the bar and says this, clip two.
What are you waiting for, Michael? God, is he amazing or what? I mean, juggling his practice and spending all that time with Kimberly, it's really a noble thing that he's doing, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it's very noble.
Hey, I'm sorry. I realize this must be hard on you.
Oh, no, not if I can escape my loneliness by coming here. Isn't that what this place is all about? Place to be with friends and kick back and forget how screwed up your life is.
Okay. A, I know that Matt let Michael crash at his place during his whole thing with Dan, but since when does Matt think so highly of Michael? And B, Megan is not really friends with Matt on this level, so after she's moaned about her situation, he's basically like, okay, and just keeps it moving, which is very funny.
Yeah. And C, guess everything's all fixed up.
Yeah.
Like, back to one, everybody.
Right.
After the big brawl. So,
yes.
Yay. Right.
Oh, God. That was in the last episode.
Amazing.
Jesus Christ. It's hard for me to remember because, you know, at this point, it's August. I watched that episode in the month of June. So it's hard to recall events.
I mean, it's also, we're at a point in the show where a lot of these episodes just run together because these are, you know, plots that are dragging over weeks and weeks that are not interesting even on a compressed timeline. So
it's true.
It's hard to know when things happen.
So true. So Matt is not around when a smarmo decides to hit on Megan. Clip three.
It's amazing, isn't it? All these lonely people in a city this big. I couldn't help but overhear you and the bartender. Let me buy you a drink.
Yeah, well, for what you want, it costs a lot more than just a drink.
I got 300 in my wallet.
Is that what you think I am? A hooker?
Hey, you made the crack.
Well, I'm not a hooker.
All right, fine. Then we'll just talk.
Get lost.
I'm just saying.
No, when I'm saying get lost, you dirtbag.
Matt breaks it up. A mini brawl ensues. Fortunately, nothing gets smashed up. But at the end of it, Megan kind of drunkenly wanders to the end of the bar. And when Matt checks on her, she burbles that she's losing Michael and she's scared of what she might do. And we get a gorgeous shot, you can see in the visual aids, of Matt looking over her shoulder like, what the fuck have I wandered into? Lady, make a friend.
Ma'am, this is Shooters. Yeah.
So the next morning, Megan wakes up on Matt's couch with completely intact lipstick. You can see in the visual age. Couch crashing culture continues, by the way. And he excuses himself when Michael shows up, but the fight between Michael and Megan is short-lived. Clip 4.
I'm breaking the agreement with her. You and I are going to have sex, and to hell with what she thinks. We just have to switch things around, okay? So days with her, nights with you.
Yeah, you know how many times I've heard that? Nights with you, baby, days with her. You know, you are no better than all those Johns I slept with before.
Come on, Megan, I love you.
Yeah, they used to say that too, you know, when they were finished and they went home to their wives. You know, I envied those women for what they had and that I didn't. I envied them and I ultimately hated them the same way that I hate Kimberly now. I hate her, dying or not, with all my heart. Now get out of here. Just looking at you is making me sick.
You know what? I'm not giving up on you. Or this relationship. I don't care what you say or do. I'm not giving up. Never.
What? She's so boring. She is not worth this. Like,
no.
My God.
She can't even enunciate her sad sack. Listen.
Yeah.
Like, and then, I mean, where this is going is like, I understand that you don't want to let go of Marcia Cross, who is one of the few people left in the cast who can actually serve this material. But
yes.
Oh, God. I mean, bless Kelly Rutherford. She is very pretty.
She is. She but is not good.
This is such a snooze. And it's. I mean, it's been, you know, making the same donuts in the parking in the plot parking lot for
10 episodes.
How many months now? Yeah.
So some number of nights later, Kimberly's leaving the beach house when Megan, waiting down the road, screeches toward her in her car, barely hitting the brakes before striking Kimberly, who is like, is this what things have come to? But then keeps talking. Clip 5.
Megan, you couldn't hurt anyone. And I'm so sorry if this all hurts you so much. It's just that I have to have my life back for a while. Can you understand that? I have to have it back. Damn you.
Does anyone say damn you outside of soap operas? Truly.
No. Damn you.
Unless you're being like, damn you to hell, and it, like, literally shaking your fist because you're
or it's
being
like
dramatic.
That little kid who's like, how dare you? Like, yes. I kind of wish it were that instead.
How dare you? Sometime after this near-death experience, Kimberly goes to see Dr. Howard Stein, who has some new MRIs to show her. You guys, the tumor shrinking. Clip 6.
Full remission with only limited treatment. It's amazing.
No, doctor. I've had extensive treatment. Treatment and the loving support of my husband, Michael. His sacrifice and his belief in me is all I needed. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Stein. This is just so exciting.
Michael's penis is magic and should be studied. He only has sex with her once.
How dare you?
I'm trying to get an OpDivo deep dicking joke to work. I can't do it, but know that it is in my heart.
So Kimberly is still absorbing this news in the hallway when Michael spots her and starts babbling about needing to end their arrangement for Megan's sake until Kimberly stops him to say things are going to work out now, but she doesn't say how and leaves him there making a hilarious, confused face you can see in the visual aids because Marcia Cross is one person who can sell this shit and Thomas Calabro is one of the others.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly the right attitude. Like, I know it's not supposed to be comedic, but he's like, well, I'm making my own fun. Let's see how that goes. It goes well.
Yep. On to the B plot. Jake visits his old kid while Allison gets a look at his next one. Okay, wait. I know in the last episode, Amanda offered to help Allison extricate herself from Jake by giving her back her D&D job, but I guess Allison took it off screen because when we first see her in this episode, the two blondes plus Billy are at the office roasting Billy, clip 7.
Do you guys remember the value of clients fiasco when Billy brought the wrong notes and the wrong storyboards and we ended up pitching fertilizer to someone who makes dishwashers?
I sometimes wonder how this agency stays in business.
Damn, that's a really good question. Yeah, it's a wonder you guys get anything done. So the goofing around that goes on here.
What are you doing here, Jake?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just came to get a up close and personal look at what you're throwing your life away for. And I gotta say, lady, it ain't a whole hell of a lot.
She needed a job, and she happens to be very good at this.
Why don't you shut up? You should be taking care of our baby. Okay, you don't want a house and a marriage and a picket fence, that's fine. But it's okay for you to take a job that works you 24 hours a day? Put you at everyone's beck and call? Never mind, that doesn't make any sense. But this is about one thing, and one thing only, and that is that you don't want that kid.
Leave it alone, Jake.
At least this is a business and not another guy, then he'd be throwing punches.
Guy, business, what's the matter? Just make a difference.
He fucking smashes a monitor. This is like so over the line. Also showing up and being like, you guys are just playing grab ass here all the time. It's night. Like no one else is there. The last three people there. It's fine to be fooling around at, you
well,
know,
and
6:30.
I mean, you run a bar. Like
yeah.
Talk about a 24/7 prospect. Like what's your problem? Also, you wanted her to be your partner in it.
Yes.
And you were frown emoji when she wouldn't do it. Like, this heel turn, and you could tell Grancho is not about it at all, because
yes.
The way he's badly overacting it is like, rah! Like, mm-hmm. okay, Dread Pirate Jake, take it easy.
Yes.
This heel turn is terrible, and I need it to stop.
Yeah, it is so, so bad. I agree,
yeah.
100%. And you're right about the job thing, too, where he's like, you should be taking care of our baby. Like, she's working in an office sitting down. You were also mad when she was on her feet serving drinks. Like, what is she supposed to do for 9 months? Like,
yeah.
She has not been ordered on bed rest. Shut the fuck up, Jake. You're not an OBGYN.
Yeah. I mean, why don't you set up a hammock by the pool? Oh, wait, there's no room because of your stupid fucking bike.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, too, and I'm furious about that. So this is all quite embarrassing for Jake. Only gets more so when the viewer sees he can be taken down by a couple of office building security guys whose most hardcore day at work generally involves chasing someone down with a sign-in sheet. But anyway, as they are wrestling Jake into the elevator, Billy helps them, and clip 8.
Get out of here.
You too, man. That bitch Allison with you.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no. The girls are fighting. Shut up, everybody.
Yeah,
at home.
That Foley on that punch was really like, okay. Did Andrew Hsu slip somebody a 50 for that? Because take it easy.
It's true. So at home, Billy bitches about the Jake Allison situation while tying a necktie on Sam. And when he is done, she says this, clip 9.
La 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 da.
Okay. I think it took until I actually cut that ridiculous clip to figure out what may have happened. Here is my theory. Because he's tying a man's necktie on her,
mm-hmm.
It's an Annie Hall reference. And the script said, la-di-da, la-di-da. And she did not know what it was. And so she improvised this, and they did not have time for her to take it again.
That is excellent forensic reconstruction of this extremely bizarre, garbled moment.
Yeah. Dave, play clip 9 again.
La-la-la-di-da.
Like, she's...
Yeah, yeah. It is clearly supposed to be la-di-da.
She sounds like a child. Like, is Brooke Langton from Space? This is like, it reminded me of that moment when she was at the bar and she's like, it's okay that you're late. I've been noshing, and holds up her glass. That's not what noshing is.
Yeah.
Help
her.
You
get this with You get this with the, what's his nuts, Charvet also.
Yeah, yeah.
That sometimes he just like freelances on an expression that is not how it's said by people of Earth.
Right.
And then they just leave it in because they don't have that. It's like, well, you know, we could ask him to take it again, but A, we don't have time, and B, it won't be any better. It's just going to be this, how do you do fellow Earthling shit all day long? So did he look okay? Was he in focus? Fine.
Right.
Season 5, folks.
So true. Anyway, Billy's reaction to that is no reaction because he's bad at acting. And then hear Jake's motorcycle starting up outside. It is in the courtyard. So was he keeping it in his apartment? Where was it? Like, did he wheel it in from the street so that he could put a little saddlebag on it and then be dramatically peeling out? It's so stupid.
It's extremely stupid. And also this bike, it's a different bike.
Oh, I didn't even know.
And
that.
It's got, I mean, don't ask me why I know this, but I think the old one was a Triumph, which was like LA hipster motorcycle. Right, and this one is just like a big old Harley looking, like roadster, like, the Harleys that you see like on a highway with two people on it and the hard-sided saddlebags, it's actually called a fat boy.
Oh.
And yeah, little trivia for you there. Hmm. Have I ever even been on one? No, I haven't. No. Don't ask me why I know this shit. But it just looks, he looks teeny.
Yeah.
On it. Like he's driving a 2-bedroom, basically. Mm-hmm. And then he has this little helmet that is a little too big for his head.
Uh-huh.
So he looks like a kid. I mean, it's just very weird. It's like he's in one of those hamster balls, but in motorcycle form. And also get it away from the pool.
Yeah. Ooh. So to Sam's question, Jake says he's taking a trip. She tries to convince him that running away isn't the answer, but since they have no relationship, he does not care what she thinks. Mm. And at Amanda's, Allison watches Jake peel out of the courtyard. And when we see him next, he is in Sutter's Creek, California. He has apparently driven drunk to a house with, as he snorts, a white picket fence, which he starts kicking in until the lady of the house comes out. I already fucked up and forgot that season one established Jake as the biological father of David, because that was 500 years ago. But if you could not place this lady as that child's mother, that's fine, because Colleen was played by Beth Toussaint in season one and is now played by Stacey Hyduck, who looks absolutely nothing like her. You can go to the visual aids and see the two of them side by side and be like, no one would be able to follow what the fuck was happening from context clues here.
True.
Anyway, Colleen is not thrilled that Jake is fucking with her curb appeal. He jokes about her husband loading up the family shotgun inside, but that guy is away on business. And Jake assures Colleen he's not there to try to make a custody claim on David. Just before a cop rolls by, and Colleen tells him everything's fine. And when the cops have left, Colleen says Jake is lucky since her husband is a big supporter of the local police. Oh, sounds cool. Mm. And they would have arrested Jake for sure. But when Jake tries to slink off, Colleen notes his current level of inebriation and tells him he's going to stay over. And the next morning, the show wants us to start thinking Jake is a good guy again, because he's gone out and purchased new fencing materials, which I guess he balanced on his lap on his motorcycle to take back to Colleen's house. Like,
I just...
There's a reason that happened off screen, because it would have been very funny. But he is now using that to rebuild what he broke. And also cueing us on how we're supposed to feel about Jake, Colleen beaming as she brings him a glass of lemonade.
Yeah, go to 7-Eleven and get yourself your own big gulp quietly. Yeah.
Yes. She also exposits that she sent Jake their new address 2 years ago, and this, as we know, is the first time that he has ever come by. He claims he wanted to see how David turned out, which, like, he's not done turning. He's, like, a tween. But Colleen is like, bullshit, you just broke up with someone. And before they can get into it more, David shows up. Just to note that this actor, Jer Adrian Lelliot, now uses she, her pronouns. But since she is playing a boy here, call David he, him.
Yeah, Colleen, I was wondering what happened to this actor, because in addition to being well cast to look like Jake.
Yes, yes.
They are pretty good, actually, given what a child actor in this figurative situation on a soap usually gets to do.
Yes, agree. She's still acting. You can look her up. But yeah, it's not the same kid that played David in season one either.
Right.
Colleen starts to introduce Jake to David, but Jake interrupts her, telling David he is an old friend of the family, which, like, yes, you met. David was not a baby in season one. He was 4 or 5. He would remember. He would remember that trip because they were at a hotel and, like, played in a pool. That's, like, a signal event when you're a kid.
It's so true.
David and his ill-fitting bike helmet, which you can see in the visual aids. Apparently, it's a family trait. Want to know if his dad will be home in time for his basketball game. And Colleen apologizes for the absent Mr. Patterson. But David is pissed that he's been missing everything this year and furiously pedals off to a friend's house. And stupid Jake squints after him like, I could do better. And we're all like, I don't know, man. You literally never have. Colleen then pouts that David gets so angry. And Jake says he knows the feeling. Jake, I'm begging you, shut up. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
That night, Jake is still loitering around Colleen's when she tells him that David is sleeping over at a friend's house. And her furniture, which I beg you to go look at in the visual aids, it is very 19th century bordello. It is so weird. It should have to be addressed in the script.
And I think they might be, I think it might be the same set furniture from Emily Valentine's apartment, or Rosie's at least, from Brandon's trip.
Like,
maybe this is just the Northern California Victorian furniture that they use when you're in Sutter's Creek or Fonoma or wherever the fuck they're supposed to be.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, Colleen continues barfing her parenting woes at Jake in a very inappropriate way, given the circumstances. Again, as I said to Megan, make a friend. Jake is not one. Jake tells her about his own angry childhood, and Colleen remembers him taking her to meet his mother and brother and how they said she was wasting her time since Jake would never get married. Jake pouts that marriage is all he ever wanted, and Colleen and her Siberian husky eyes, no offense, but you can also see those in the visual aids, too light, say she thinks she really needed to come here, and Jake, who is still on paper engaged, has no compunction about fucking with another person's marriage by pouncing on her face. Not for long, as he quickly pulls away and she agrees they shouldn't. She's still in love with her husband, and Jake is still in love with whatever woman he hasn't bothered to identify by name in the 24 hours he and Colleen have spent together. And Jake says this, clip 10.
Her name's Allison. I could run to the end of the earth and still not be away from her.
Shut up. Like, come on.
Shut.
It's not credible.
No.
They have not even been dating for an entire season of the show at this point. Like, I just don't buy it. I've never bought the two of them together. I never have. And it's only getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, they actually had more chemistry in season one, which
That's
is
true.
Something to study, than they do now when they're supposed to be endgame, whatever. Mm-hmm. Good luck to everybody.
So Billy and Sam then, back in L.A., arrive at the hospital, having been called there by Allison, who is having cramping. And the desk nurse who directs them is Louisa Leschin, a.k.a. Anna from 90210. You can see her in her new hairstyle in the visual aids. She tells them to wait since Allison's still in with the doctor. And while Sam goes to a payphone to call Amanda, another doctor or nurse comes out, can somehow tell Billy's there for Allison, and yanks him in to see Allison while Sam waits on the phone. So Billy ends up in the exam room just as Allison's completely goo-free ultrasound starts. Like, I've never had one, but I'm pretty sure from watching television, they put that lubricant on to, like, slide around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not this time. Allison watches the monitors. The doctor says the baby's fine. Its heartbeat is strong. And the nurse says she thought Allison would want the father there when she first heard the heartbeat. Make wild assumptions, why don't you? And the next day, Jake is still fixing the fucking fence when Colleen runs out to say David left a note. He is running away from home. Lady, he's like 10. He is not going to get far.
Not with his bike helmet on backwards.
It's true.
Dolt.
At D&D, Billy's yammering about the office he now has as Allison, back in that dumb top with the boob pockets, gazes at the bullpen, faintly smiling and ignoring him. Relatable. He guesses that she is thinking about the baby and is right, and she blahs on about how thrilling it was to see it, and now she thinks she might really be able to raise a child alone. And she was happy Billy was there last night, and he was moved by it too, and Sam walks in just in time to see them hugging. And up in Sutter's Creek, Jake finds David moping on a bridge and orders him to listen. Clip 11.
I don't have to listen to you. Who are you anyway? Some guy out after my mom?
Hey, watch your mouth. If I know what it's like to get angry, it's tough to control it. I do the same thing. But you gotta look at things from your dad's side. He's out there busting his butt to provide for his family, and I know he would much rather be with you and your mom.
Woody?
No, I met your dad. I know him. He's a great guy. He's a lucky guy. He's got everything.
Are you a dad?
Yeah, actually, I am.
So how come you're here and not with your kid?
Because I got a knack for making really stupid decisions. And that was one of them. You know, you just try to do the right thing and you just keep screwing it up.
You're running away too, huh?
Yeah, I am.
What from?
Just about everything, I guess.
So, can I have a ride home on that cool motorcycle of yours?
Yeah, I think we could probably arrange that. Come on.
No, ask his mom before you put a child on your motorcycle.
Yeah. Jesus.
But also, remember that question when David was like, are you a dad? Why aren't you with your kid? In the next episode, because the writers apparently forgot that happened. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Also, barf. Finally, our A-plot. Craig involves himself further in Amanda and Peter's business while Carter improbably tries out a new life. We open at Peter's new place in the marina. It is not the same as Richard's house, but it does have the same ugly pipe banisters inside. You can see that in the visual aids. Not having heard Amanda's message from the end of the previous episode when he was busy fucking Taylor, a shirtless Peter is confused to see Amanda at his door while Taylor hangs back in the other half of a pajama set we are expected to believe Peter owns. I don't believe it.
I mean, like, I can see him getting the set and then just chucking all the tops.
Yeah. Yes.
In a heap.
Fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter looks ashamed and regretful as Amanda explains this pop-by, and when she asks if he's going to invite her in, he mumbles that they have nothing to talk about and tries to close the door on her, and she protests, thinking this seeming pissiness is about her spacing on breakfast, and when she claims work stuff, he sees that he knows all about that and would rather she not rub it in his face. And I just want to note, that's the mode that Peter's supposed to be in for this scene, of like, he's mad about Craig, but I think Jack Wagner added something extra with his expression when he opened the door, where he's like, it may not be written in, but he's like, oh, fuck, I actually did it and I suck. I fucked Taylor. I really screwed it up.
Yeah.
So when Peter has successfully closed the door on Amanda, Taylor approaches and he pounces on her and grosses us all out. I hate these two. I hate them.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, together. When Taylor returns to the courtyard the next morning, she passes Nick, who snits that Kyle is worried sick about where she was. And sure enough, when she walks into the apartment, Kyle bitches about her making call around to track her down. She lies that she was at a motel and that she purposely didn't call him so he would know what it feels like. And as she stomps off, Kyle yells after her that he kicked Nick out, and she snaps that he was a day late and then slams the bedroom door and nervously catches her breath because she got away with it for now. And then Carter wakes up from the pullout couch to a slightly chilly Sydney in a very cute gray-toned floral suit you can see in the visual aids. When he notices that she has not greeted him, he says everyone is entitled to one impulsive act. And when she tries to start a conversation about his having spontaneously moved in, she has to stop when she sees Walter outside and scrambles to hide Carter. And Walter comes in hot, demanding to know where Carter is. Once everyone else has figured out that Carter has peaced out, it's going to fuck up the whole company. But then Walter notices Carter's duffel bag, and Carter comes out and insists it was his idea to leave, and Walter doesn't believe it in clip 12.
Carter, I have no idea what this woman said to get this started, but it's my duty to inform
you. No, you have no more duties, Walter. You're fired. And you can spread it around the company that anyone else who comes looking for me will be fired as well.
You can't do this. I've been with the company for over 10 years.
And you'll receive a nice severance. And if you're still upset at me, sue me.
This isn't the end of it, Carter. You wait.
God, I handled that well. Don't you think?
So, Carter is generally not in the mode of the tech bro we have come to know in our day, except for how he has no problem having a conversation all by himself and not noticing a woman in front of him is not participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He announces he's going to get an ordinary, mundane job today, and if not for Sydney, he never would have had the courage to do this, and she does not look too proud. And that night when she returns to the courtyard, it's on the end of Carter hitting Kyle up for a job. Carter does not register Sydney's confusion as he enthuses about making $6 an hour. Hey, maybe those are jobs people who don't own giant mansions actually need, and you shouldn't take one because you think it would be fun to pretend you're broke. I don't love this.
Yeah.
Then Kyle reminds us that he and Sydney have a past, which you might have forgotten because it was in the first third of the season, approximately 84 episodes ago, clip 13.
You know, Sid, I love this guy. Great sense of humor. Yeah, moved him right in, didn't you? Don't mess around, do you, Sid?
No, I don't.
Yeah, shut
up, Kyle.
Also,
like, he gives a shit.
Seriously.
Fuck off, Kyle.
Fuck off I don't. A lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not actually Kyle / Estes's fault because the writers don't know what they want Kyle to be from episode to episode. So sometimes he's a, you know, marine meathead, and other times he's a, you know, sensitive whatever, trapped in a marriage to a creep with demented hair. I don't know. I don't care.
No, but you're right. It is a problem. Sydney is ramping up to having that conversation with Carter about what he and they are actually doing right now, but then they enter the apartment and she sees the tables all set for a romantic candlelit dinner. He cooked Cornish game hens himself. I would not trust this guy to make me poultry when he did not know how to make a grilled cheese sandwich.
No.
Enjoy that salmonella, but it's to thank her for all she's done. And she visibly melts and tells him no one alive has ever done anything like this for her. And she is fine skipping dinner, if you know what we mean. And we do. She is concerned about her digestive tract. The next morning, Taylor comes out to a pouty Kyle packing. There was a fire at the restaurant in Boston, so he's leaving to deal with it and would appreciate her handling things at Kyle's. It might be good for them to spend a little time apart, he says. And when he opens the door, Amanda is there with a key for him to pass on to Nick, because Amanda just approved Nick's apartment application. And Taylor has the balls to bleat at Amanda, whose husband she just fucked, about letting Nick move into the complex. In fact, Nick is not just moving into the complex. He's going to be right next door, which is going to put a crimp in Taylor's creep plans. And Taylor then finds a third ball to ask Amanda about Peter's new place, clip 14.
A condo at the marina. I'm surprised you haven't offered to decorate it for him.
Well, he'd have to ask me now, wouldn't he?
I wouldn't hold your breath.
Well, I wouldn't either if you expect him to come back to you.
It sounds like someone with inside information.
Oh, no, I haven't seen him for weeks. But hey, if you talk to him before I do, will you give him my best?
Not in a million years.
Yep.
Why does Amanda even still talk to her? Seriously.
Honest to God.
She's so weird and annoying.
Yes, she is. That night, Peter's at the office dictating chief of staff notes, clip 15.
It's my opinion that at our present level of spending, Wilshire Memorial will have to close the stores by midsummer. Now, my suggestion is... Taylor,
don't get up. Don't you move a muscle. You know, I always wondered why Kyle had an affair. Now I understand. It's the danger and the anticipation.
Can we back up to the hospital's in financial trouble? Like, maybe you should pay more attention to that. Take a break from the fucking.
Yeah, seriously. Also, she's so... I just keep thinking of, like, that whole thing in the Girls' Bike Club about J-Lo being like, no, this is going to be great. It is. And, like, clambering onto... I guess it was Baffleck at that point, being like, no, this is going to be great. And she's got, like, a manual. This is not sexy at all. And it is a credit to Jack Wagner that he can make you believe even a little that he would consider cheating on Amanda with her.
It's true.
Not that she's not pretty. She's just such a weirdo, and I hate the storyline.
Same, and I agree, 100%. He tries to pry Taylor off him, but she ignores that, telling him about Kyle's trip and that she'll make time after Kyle's closes for fucking. She's straddling his lap when Michael bursts in unannounced and quickly tries to exit again, but Peter and Taylor both tell him not to, and Taylor hurries out. And when she's gone, Michael accurately assesses Peter, clip 16.
You slut, you.
I mean, takes one to know one.
It's true. Yes. Obviously, to that point, Michael is not trying to hear that it's not what he thinks between Peter and Taylor, since Michael is on his fourth wife and has cheated on all of them, often with each other, but still. He reminds Peter that moral issues got the last chief of staff canned. Peter doesn't care, adding that Taylor makes him feel good and has no expectations. Buddy, she's got expectations for days, but go off. The next night at Kyle's, Sydney's at the bar as Carter apologizes to Nick for ruining another bottle of wine. This is not the first fuck up for Carter in his new career as a waiter, which he is still being extremely obnoxious about, by the way. Clip 17.
Just one of the people. Working for a living. Can you believe it? Somebody actually stiffed me tonight. I mean, can you believe that?
Actually, yes.
I should have known the two of you were friends.
What, did you put the squeeze on, Kyle? Please hire my incompetent friend.
Nope. Carter got this one all on his own.
Well, Carter, you got two choices. You can either quit, or you can take the only other job available. Dishwasher.
Dishwasher?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Oh my God, that is so perfect. Yes, I'll start right now.
Oh, Sydney, you sure know how to pick them.
Yep, even better at holding on to them. At least better than you are.
Oh! Also.
Earned that, yes.
100%. But Carter can't wash a dish. He's going to suck at that job worse. He's going to be breaking shit immediately.
Yeah, true.
After Sydney has left, Nick needles Taylor about everyone hating her just as Peter shows up. We're supposed to believe Peter made a reservation for a one-top? Sit at the bar, you weirdo. But anyway, Nick
or
has...
Or go to Shooters, Jesus.
Go to Shooters, for real. Nick adds that Kyle specifically asked Nick to keep an eye on Taylor, so... Taylor intercepts Peter at the door and warns him, and Peter starts right in, cozying up to Nick, asking for the secret McBride scotch that Kyle keeps hidden. And just then, Amanda walks in with Craig for some reason, and as the score gets upset, Nick notes Peter's reaction and finds out what it's about. And Peter then decides Kyle's is not where he wants to dine this evening and brushes past Amanda on his way out, and they have this exchange, clip 18.
Enough of this, all right? I feel like I'm dealing with a four-year-old.
You know, when I came to Santa Barbara that time, I should have beat that little son of a bitch into the ground before it got any more out of control.
Wait, what are you talking about?
You know damn well what I'm talking about.
Peter,
what did you say to him? Why can't you leave him alone?
Anything that goes on between Peter and me is about us, not you. Do you understand? Come on, let's get out of here.
It is... so stupid and such an obvious plot device to have Amanda and Craig spending any time together outside of work.
Yeah.
Like, it was one thing when he was drunk on her doorstep and she was like, all right, you can't sleep out here. Come in, I guess. I'm a human being. But, like, voluntarily going out for dinner with him after work, why? For what purpose other than this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why he, having been humiliatingly played on the company front, would still be going into work even, much less wanting to try to still get it in with her when she, like, just completely degenitalized him.
It's true.
In that deal. But okay, I could see him still wanting to try it, but her?
Yeah.
Like, there's absolutely no way. She's already eaten him for breakfast like 7 times in time on the show.
Yes. We also don't know where he is living, by the way, because it was represented to us that he had to get out of Field Manor like immediately upon the reading of the will, leaving aside how preposterous that is, whatever, that was established. So he slept one night on Amanda's couch, but since then Allison has been there, so we don't know where he's staying. Maybe he's the one Melrose Place character who understands what a hotel is.
Maybe. That may not last. And a question mark? Who could say? Who Maybe indeed. There's a room above the halfway cafe and he's commuting from there. Seems like kind of a long way, though.
Yeah. So Nick crabs about Taylor driving all the customers away as Taylor downs a shot looking smug. And later, at Kyle's, Taylor has to scramble to accommodate a party of 6. When Nick is like, I should have written it down. She's like, yeah, you should have. He snaps that he works for Kyle, not her. I mean, you work for the restaurant, dude. Shut the fuck up and write shit down in the book. This is basic stuff. Speaking of shut the fuck up, Craig is there. Clip 19.
We're gonna get you.
Beer's fine. There's nothing worse than a woman for a boss.
Well, my boss is Kyle, not that hag.
Right. Name's Craig Field. You might see me in here with Amanda Woodward.
Yeah, sure, the blonde, Dr. Burns' wife, huh?
You pay good attention.
Part of the job.
So, by any chance, you're looking to make some extra money?
I'm always looking for extra money.
Good, because it turns out that Amanda, she's kind of suspicious that something's up with Peter. I figured if he's in here all the time, you might be able to find something out for me.
It's possible.
You know, she wants to see if he's seeing anyone romantically. So, what do you say? 100 now? 1,000 when you come up with some proof?
Got yourself a deal, mister. Don't worry. If there's any dirt on your Dr. Burns, even a speck, I'll find it.
Oh, boy.
You won't have to work that hard.
No, you won't.
Also, I mean, I did not want to find anything that these two were doing amusing, but the delivery of that hag was...
I know!
...pretty funny, because the only thing I like less than this team up is Taylor. So
it's true. And hag is the perfect word for her. Like, it's so rude, but yet so perfect. And I just want to note something that has just come up that I saw on Instagram. I don't follow Lisa Rinna. I should. But another person I do follow reposted one of her stories. Lisa Rinna has a wine, Sarah. So perhaps we can hear about that in future bonus episode.
I am on it.
It's called Rinna Wines, of course. And she posted a poll. Would you buy Rinna's wine? Poll results. Yes, 8%. No, 92%. So people have turned on her in the Real Housewives verse as well, or I guess have been turning on her. So, just a little side note about the wine and how much people hate her.
Okay. I have added both of those things to my list.
Fantastic. That night, Nick is suspicious that Taylor is not leaving the restaurant with him. She has to do some bookkeeping and will lock up, she claims. And when he is gone, she creeps into the kitchen to let Peter in the back door. Not a euphemism for now.
Boo.
Sorry. She apologizes for the setting, but Peter calls it earthy and then asks what's for dinner. And the answer is, of course, ass. He seems like he's maybe trying to get her off him. They hear a noise at the door, but it is not Nick. It's Kyle. And Taylor barely gets Peter out when Kyle gets into the kitchen and he quizzically notes some flour on Taylor's shoulder, which she brushes off, both the flour and his unspoken question. But otherwise, Kyle only seems the normal amount of suspicious of Taylor and claims he was thinking about her the whole time he was in Boston. No matter what he does, he can't stop loving her. Try harder, dude. But then they start going at it while Peter listens at the door. And that's where we leave all of these idiots for now. Let's close up by naming our episode MVP. I mean, I want to say Amanda, but she really is an idiot with this Craig business. That's a tough one.
I mean, I'm going to go with David.
Yeah.
Well cast. And, you know, he gave Jake a lot to think about while being kind of a bitch about it. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, fair. I'm going to say Thomas Calabro because he was really funny in all of the scenes he was in, including ones that were probably not intended to be funny, but they made me laugh and I appreciate him finding his way in as he is able to.
Totally fair.
Least valuable player. Jake.
Yeah, it's got to be Jake.
It's the 90s. Monitors are expensive. Don't be smashing those up. And you know Amanda's not going to go after him to replace it.
Yeah. And, I mean, then he drives north and destroys more property while driving a motorcycle drunk. Like, come on, guy.
Yeah. And side loser to the writers for, again, setting him up as a gigantic villain and then almost immediately trying to undo it. Like, it did not have to go like this. And we hate it.
Yeah, we do. Next time on Again With This, Kimberly's prognosis changes, Jake tries to prove he's changed, nothing's changed about Sid's luck in love, and we sure wish Peter hadn't changed his mind about Taylor. You'll wish the subjects of our official aides would change clothes. You can find all of our wardrobe notes for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You could join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you could still call or text us at 210-920-4699. Again, that's 210-920-HO-99. Get into it. I am non-figurative picket fence, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is recast baby mama, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Condo at the Marina, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Damn you.